Chapter 18. The Mark and the Marked. Sermon. A Burned Figure. Hounds spent an hour or two getting used to the steady rocking motion of the walking city. But eventually he had taken to it like a local, and now he could move through the mile-long corridors without scuffing his elbows on the iron walls with each gyration. It made spotting other new arrivals very easy. Even the most experienced counter-spy would take a time to get in sync with the lurch-drop, lurch-rise rhythm of the great mobile platform. That was part of the reason Haln had picked the city as their means of transit down the continental spine, an extra way to help him flush out any potential followers on their trail. His caution was yet to be tested, however. Haln always kept to the tenets of his tradecraft, following rules of espionage that had been set down centuries before humans had even left this blighted planet. He took circuitous routes, never used the same vox module twice, varied his pattern, his gait, his appearance. He assumed nothing, distrusted everything, just as he had been trained. And yet, in all the time he had been active on Terra, there had never been a moment where he was truly afraid. Never a point where he had glimpsed a flash of an enemy's blade and known he was close to being discovered. Was it that his opposite numbers in service to the Sigillite were so good that he never saw them? Were they watching and waiting to see where he would lead them? Or was the opposite true, that Malkador's agents were as ignorant to his like as the people about this platform were to Haln's real intention? He suspected the latter, but he would not allow the opposition's laxity to infect him. It was acceptable, desirable even, for one's enemy to be lazy. But that didn't mean Haln could slacken off. He had to behave as if those out to stop him were as competent as he was, even if that had never been true. Haln halted at the iron door to his rented cabin, and rearranged the cups and plaspaper bags he carried so he could recover the beam key that opened it. Checking the alcove to make sure he was alone and unseen, he had already disabled the primitive security monitor at the far corner, Haln unlocked the hatch and kicked it open with his boot. The room was small and gloomy. It smelled of old metal and sweat. Haln deposited his load on the collapsible table in the middle of the compartment and went to the circular window, pivoting it to open outward. Immediately, the steady crunch and grind of massive gears entered the space, and he stole a glance out. The cabin was above and to the aft of the eighth leg mechanism on the port side of Walking City, a massive iron limb as tall as a hab tower that ended in a splay-toed foot large enough to crush a city block. 20 legs on both sides of the gargantuan moving platform provided motive action for the slab-like mobile settlement as it labored southwards towards the equator, endlessly marching through a dust bowl that stretched from horizon to horizon. Rising from a corner, the assassin helped himself to a cup of lukewarm tisane and scowled at the taste. Then he found a bag with skewers of cooked arthropod meat and set to work devouring them. Haln sat on a stool, took his own meagre portions, and ate in silence, observing the killer without directly watching him. Haln was only ever honest with himself, and he was so now as he considered how much he disliked the mission he had been given by his handler, his Aleph. What he knew for sure was that the directive had come from outside the legion to which he was oath-sworn. Haln was one of many non-lords, part of a vast army of commons who toiled for his masters, the first and the last, and he gleaned that his assignment had been handed down from the sons of Horus, perhaps even from the Lupercal's court itself. He had been diverted from the midst of other duties and forced to leave work undone for this, to be the chaperone for a man who woke screaming in the middle of the night, who constantly shifted back and forth between icy lucidity and morose disengagement. At first, Haln wondered what was so special about this particular killer. There were so many capable of that act, he reasoned, Haln among them, until the moment he saw the assassin at his work. The killings at the sanctuary were unlike anything he had witnessed before. That horrific weapon that seemed to hide away until the assassin called it forth, and the things it did to living flesh. If Haln had still been capable of sleeping, He imagined it would have given him nightmares. As it was, he used chem shunts to edit his own memories of those scenes, softening his recall of the worst moments. What he could not remember fully, he could not dwell on. That was the idea. In reality, it didn't work. He had to hold much of it untouched in his mind, for the sake of the operation. And so, Hahn still recalled enough to be fearful of the assassin, and that cursed gun of his. He wanted this to be over and done. The work he had come to Terra for, that the Aleph had tasked him to prepare, that would now go on without him. Dozens of operatives, primed to spring a great feint against Rogel Dorn's defences, an invasion before the invasion that would entice the Primarch of the Imperial Fists into tipping his hand. It was an elegant endeavour that Hahn had been enthused by. He liked the clockwork of the notion, the sheer game of it. By contrast, conveying a murderer, no matter how monstrous his ways might be, seemed like a lesser work. Any bloody fool can pull a trigger, the spy told himself. As the thought crossed his mind, the assassin stopped chewing and stared directly at him.
How do I know I can trust you?
Hahn arranged his features into a neutral aspect.
We've already had this conversation, don't you recall? Before you sterilize the settlement.
The assassin nodded slowly.
What did we learn from them? The killed.
There are several possible vectors for the target. Hahn took another sip of tisane, and with patience gave the same report he had twice already. He reminded the assassin about the half-dead, burned souls who had begged for quick ends while Hahn flensed them for intelligence on the target. There were many probable locations, and it was taking time to narrow them down. Hahn had contacts he was using to follow up leads, and that data was yet to mature.
You have told me this,
snapped the assassin, his hard eyes glittering, his manner becoming stony once again.
Is there no more you have? What use are you to me?
He held out his hand.
Show me your mark.
I don't have a...
Show me your goddamned mark, you stinking horsen!
The words exploded from the assassin with such venom that Hahn actually jerked back, the stool scraping across the metal deck. Before he could get out of reach, the assassin grabbed his arm by the wrist and pulled him over the tiny table. Hahn toppled off the stool, and his cup emptied its contents over the floor. Still, he was quick enough to will his own tattoo into quiescence before the killer could wrench back his sleeve and glare owlishly at his hand, his forearm. Had he been unready, the thin, greenish tracery of a many-headed form would have been visible there. Instead, there was only umber-coloured flesh with the texture of worked leather.
You don't have it,
said the assassin, his towering fury smothered in a moment. He released his rigid grip, disgusted.
You don't,
he repeated. Then the killer pulled off one of the black, ballistic fabric gloves he habitually wore and offered Hahn his bare palm. The mutant shape on his pale skin could not be called a scar. That word simply wasn't grotesque enough to encompass the abhorrent nature of the brand on the assassin's flesh. It was, in some fashion, an eight-armed star. An octed, Hahn had heard it called. But it was also a festering stigmata, ever bleeding and raw, a cut that smoked rather than oozed, a monstrous and abnormal wound, not just in the meat of the man, but greater than that. Hahn instinctively sensed that the mark went soul deep. He shrank back, recoiling as carefully as he could so as not to show how squeamish it made him feel. Hahn had opened the flesh of hundreds and never felt anything as base as the repulsion he experienced at that sight. Mercifully, the assassin hid his horrible grace back inside the glove, eyeing him.
You have been here a while. How was that possible? They couldn't send too many with the Pathfinders. The scry seers in the towers would read it.
I came here through more conventional methods, Hahn said, gripped by a sudden need to fill the air in the cramped cabin with anything other than the thought of that cursed mark.
My insertion was with a group of refugees. Previously, I served my masters with disinformational sorties and proxy attrition. Then I was tasked with a direct intervention.
Normally, Halln would never have voiced even a fraction of this detail to someone from outside the Legion hierarchy, but he suspected that the assassin would never live beyond the completion of this mission to tell of it. He had swept the cabin and pronounced it clean of listening devices that very afternoon. "The only person who can hear my words is a dead man walking," he thought.
"On Terra,"
prompted the assassin.
"Not at first."
Halln shook his head as the room tilted, the walking city clanking and heaving over some ravine far below.
"I was put aboard a flotilla of ships running to Sol after escaping the rebellion."
He had to remember to call Horus's act a rebellion, not an insurrection or a revolt, as he did when speaking in the character of his cover.
"It went poorly. The custodian guard intervened and there were many deaths. But I was able to escape in a small craft and reconnect with our assets already in situ."
The assassin grimaced at the mention of the Legio Custodes and looked away.
"Those arrogant gold-plated wretches. I should like to kill one of them, under the gaze of all their cohorts. Just once. To remind them they are not perfect. Let them know there are better weapons."
He glared up at Halln, and the barely restrained violence the man had shown earlier was back again.
"I want a target. Do you hear me? I need it. There's no purpose for me otherwise."
Halln's eyes narrowed.
"I can't just find you someone to murder, even in a place like this. Not in the way that you do it."
He nodded toward the marked hand, the killer's gun hand, and remembered the dead at the sanctuary once again.
"It would be too risky. Traces would be left behind. Too difficult to explain away." "Then find me what I came here for," spat the killer. "Quickly!"
What the followers had made their church had once been a vast section of a sluice mechanism, a crevice between two large coolant channels that could direct wastewater away from the atmosphere processors and into the air below Hesperides as dirty rainfall. Accumulated layers of rust and grime told Garrow that the system had not worked for years, perhaps decades. This was borne out by the silence coming from the coolant pipes. Nothing flowed in there. The whole area of the orbital plate was inert and largely abandoned, buried as it was deep on the floating city's keel, where sunlight never fell. The church was suspended on one of dozens of gridwork deck frames, each of them layered atop one another in complex profusion. He made his way down to one of the lower levels and found a point to watch what took place overhead, and wait. Above the legionary, the believers moved back and forth, none of them pausing to consider that an intruder had already found his way into their house. Once he saw the believer who had escaped the thugs in the marketplace, heard him talking to his comrades about the dangers out there in the alleyways. While the specific threat of the bearded man and his friends had been removed by Garrow, there were others that these poor fools were only vaguely aware of. The best part of a day passed. Garrow willed his body into a state of solidity, becoming static and unmoving as he lingered. He did not require water or food. His bio-implants were more than capable of sustaining him for months on the stored nourishment distributed throughout his artificial organs. He let his mind drift, absorbing the sounds of the believers at their worship. He listened to them as they quietly sang old forbidden hymnals or recited pieces of the Lectitio's texts. For the most part, though, they kept together in small groups, and their conversations, no matter what aspect they wore, orbited around the same unpromising subject. When will the Warmaster come to Terra? Then, a voice Garrow had not heard for years reached into his quiet mind and brought him back to the surface of full awareness.
"Hello, my friends."
The legionary raised his head to get a better view of the church's dais, just visible through the holes in the floor plates, and there he saw an old man.
"I'm pleased to find so many of you here."
Once upon a time, that old man had worn the robes of a high imperial iterator, and he had spoken only of the Emperor's crusade against idolatry, religionism, and the plague of superstition. But since the evolution of one young woman into sainthood, the man had become the greatest convert to a new understanding, the veneration of the Emperor of mankind as a living god. Kirill Sinderman clasped his hands together and bowed to the assembled group. Garrow could tell by the creaking of the deck above his head that the makeshift church was filled to capacity, even though none of the attendees spoke louder than a murmur. Despite his advanced years, Cinderman's voice carried over them with the clarity born of zeal.
"I know you are afraid," he began. "Of course you are. It is true, what many of you fear. We are on the edge of an abyss, and a step too far will send us to our end. Not just death, mind. Not the material ending of our flesh and bone, but of our souls. Our faith."
He broke off, chuckling to himself.
"There were days when I did not believe in such ephemeral notions," admitted the iterator. "No longer. My eyes were opened by the saint, who, in her glory, showed me a brief glimpse of the God Emperor's will, and the darkness he is ranged against."
A ripple of apprehension echoed through the space, and Garrow held his own counsel on the exemplars of that darkness that he too had seen.
"The arch-enemy has a force of such great fatality at his fingertips," Cinderman continued. "And as we stand here and draw breath, it closes the distance to terror. Inevitable. Inexorable. When Horus arrives..."
The iterator stumbled over the War Master's name, as if it were ashes in his mouth.
"There will be such horror. This will come to pass. The God Emperor knows it, and by his wish, so does the saint, and so do we. Know that I speak truth to you when I say we have grueling days to come. The sky will burn and blacken. Death in manners undreamt of shall stalk the world."
The crowd were utterly silent now, and even Garrow felt his breath stilled in his chest by the old man's steady, purposeful sermon.
"Some of you question," said Cinderman,
the deck rasping as he walked off the dais and out among the gathered followers.
"You ask why we must face this terror. Why does he not leave the Imperial Palace and show his face? Why does he not cast down the ruin storm from the sky and take the war to his errant sons? I tell you it is because even now, in the bowels of this planet, the God Emperor fights on another front, in another war. A war that only he can wage."
The legionary's eyes narrowed. How was it possible that Cinderman could know such a thing? Garrow had heard many rumours about the Emperor's absence on the stage of conflict, but never anything stated with such certitude.
"We are being tested, my friends," Cinderman was saying,
his words echoing off the iron walls.
"Tempered in these moments to become something greater for the coming battle. To be made ready for the advance of such chaos, we must be primed for it. We must grow to be unafraid."
He took a long breath, and his tone became almost fatherly.
"Doubts are not forbidden. Questions are not silenced in this chapel. Ours is not a faith that is so delicate that it cannot stand up to hard questions. That is why we swept away the old churches and the false gods during the Great Crusade. We erased every ancient crumbling belief because they were weak. Their credo could not resist the test of a keen mind or questions not easily answered. They asked for blind faith in something that could not be perceived, touched, or experienced. We do nothing of the kind. Our deity lives among us. He can be seen, and in some small manner, he can be known to us."
A few of the believers picked up on Cinderman's words and called out in affirmation as he continued.
"We question. And we have answers. We emerge the stronger for it, and so we shed our fears."
He paused again, and the room quieted.
"I am unafraid, because I have walked the path to reach this place, and on that journey I have learned. Now I look to the road ahead, the road that leads to the edge of the abyss, and see it for what it is. Not fate, not some predestiny scripted by a phantom deity that puppets me like a toy. No, no!"
Cinderman's voice shifted again, taking on a hard, defiant edge that seemed strange coming from the elderly iterator.
"This is the duty we have. This is the path we are on. Resist. Resist and survive and resist again. For the God Emperor of mankind is not the engine of our future. No, my friends. We are the engine of his.
The old man's words rose to fill the chamber.
He empowers us, and we empower him. And through that unity, we will know glory.
The church erupted in a cacophony of cries and applause, and for a moment even the legionary felt his spirit lifted by the power of Cinderman's oratory. The decking above his head shuddered, resonating with the righteous power of the followers. That was why Garrow did not become aware of the child until it was too late. Beneath the shouting, he heard the clank of movement somewhere nearby, on the same underlevel. Moving as quickly as he could in the cramped space, Garrow came about and found himself face to face with a small girl. The child had the delicate features and red hair characteristic of some Jovian commoner bloodlines, and her dirty clothes suggested she might be a refugee from one of the outer moons. Her eyes were very wide, and her face was pale with shock.
"Wait," he rumbled, keeping his words soft.
Her scream was high and piercing, and it seemed to go on and on. How a little frame with such tiny lungs was capable of emitting so sharp a sound was beyond the legionary, and the girl scrambled away before he could reach her. Cursing himself for his momentary lack of focus, Garrow pushed out of his hiding place and took two quick steps across the lower deck. The child vanished up towards the church proper, scrambling along pipes and through gaps that would barely have accommodated the warrior's hand, let alone his body. Cries of alarm were spreading through the gathered followers, and he caught the sound of lasguns powering up. Clearly the beliefs of the saint's followers did not stretch to pacifism. There was no point trying to hold on to his meagre cover now it had been well and truly blown. Better instead, he decided, to use what space marines were best at. Shock and awe. With a growl of effort, Garrow launched himself upwards and bulled his way through layers of the metal deck, forcing rusted metal outward until he crashed out onto the floor before the dais. He rose to his full height, his face set in an imperious glare, casting a cold gaze over the followers as they stood terror-struck before him. In the front rank, there were 8 people with short-frame naval-issue beam rifles, and as one they trained their weapons on the giant that had risen into their midst. Of the child who had raised the alarm there was no sign, nor could Garrow see Kirill Cinderman. He guessed that the iterator had been rushed out of the chamber the moment the screaming started.
"Is that it?"
said a frightened voice, from somewhere among the faces hiding behind the ranks of pews.
"First Salvaguardia, and now here," said another. "He's come to kill us all!"
Garrow raised his hand, but panic detonated like a bomb, and suddenly the crowd behind the followers with guns was fragmenting, some groups rooted to the spot, others flooding towards the hanging blackout cloths that were the entrance to the church. The legionary read the faces of the believers before him, and he saw the glitter of determination in the eyes of the one that would shoot first, a wind-burned woman with hair in tight black rows. Garrow's right hand was already snapping back to the hilt of Libertas with transhuman speed, running to a clock that was far faster than any unaugmented response. His tactical mind told him that he could put down these 8 with only 2 cuts of the blade, killing outright at least half of them and leaving the rest to bleed out in minutes. Without his armor, the concentrated lasfire of multiple rifles at close range could gravely wound him. A lucky shot might even end his life. But he was not here for battle. These people had been waiting for an enemy, and in his haste, Garrow had presented that to them. No killing today, he told himself. Not here, at least. Even though this chapel was nothing more than a repurposed drainway, it felt disrespectful to shed blood here. In a lightning-fast flash, Garrow drew the sword in a downward flourish that took off the front quarter of the woman's rifle as easily as trimming a plant stem. She recoiled, staring at the sparks bleeding from the end of the ruined gun. The sharp crack of superheated air sounded, and Garrow hissed, more in annoyance than genuine pain, as a single laser bolt grazed his shoulder. He turned a hard glare on one of the other armed followers, a gangly, dark-skinned youth, who looked at his rifle as if it had betrayed him by going off on its own. Garrow's unflinching gaze was enough that the youth dropped the weapon and backed away.
"I'm not here to kill anyone," intoned the legionary. "I was at Salvaguardia, or whatever you wish to call it. The Afric Sanctuary,
but I was too late to halt what happened there. The woman with the broken gun tossed it away, trying to recover some of her earlier courage.
Or maybe you did it. Maybe the Regent sends you and his phantoms to cross us off, eh? One at a time.
She shook her head, her wary gaze never leaving his.
Men of the Legion, they don't come to read the book. We don't trust.
You're wrong, Garrow told her. The book. Its reach is further and higher than you can know.
You need to go, she shot back,
unwilling to listen to him. She knew, they all knew, he could end them. And yet, they still stood against Garrow. They were as brave as they were devoted. He opened his mouth to reply, but a commotion at the back of the chamber stilled his words. He heard an argument taking place, and Cinderman's voice raised in great annoyance. Suddenly, the iterator burst through the blackout cloths, shrugging off the grip of those around him as he went. The old man took a few steps and stopped, his hand rising to his mouth as he caught sight of the standoff.
Oh, Infinite!
Yes! He came forward, an honest smile breaking out across his lined face.
Captain Garrow, it is you, isn't it? Alive and well.
What happened next was quite alien to the legionary. The iterator pushed his way through the armed followers and embraced Garrow, like a long-lost sibling, or at least as much as he could, given the discrepancy in their heights.
Do you know who this is?
Cinderman demanded of the believers, some of whom were now warily filing back into the chamber. He threw a derisive wave at the woman and her armed cohort, speaking to them like they were disobedient children.
Do not court further insult. Put those guns away. This person is a friend to the Imperial truth. He is always welcome among us.
Cinderman's manner shifted, and briefly he was the great orator again, his words filling the air.
You look upon the face of Battle Captain Nathaniel Garrow, and you should be honored. He is a true hero, a rescuer. He saved my life and that of the saint. We would be long dead at the hands of the arch-traitor if not for his fortitude and daring.
Garrow heard his name rush back and forth across the church in a wave of whispers, and the strange moment made his skin prickle.
Well met, Kirill Cinderman, he offered, then faltered over his next words.
Now he was here, he was not sure how to ask the question that had been gnawing at him for months.
The last time you came to my chancel you made a forthright entrance?
Cinderman nodded towards the buckled floor plates.
And so again. You could have used the door, Captain.
He smiled up at the legionary.
I erred on the side of caution. Perhaps too much so.
The iterator nodded gravely.
Zaon was right when she said the Legiones Astartes are uncommon in these halls. But all are welcome, after a fashion.
There are many among my kindred who would hear you, Garrow told him, if they could.
Cinderman touched Garrow's hand, and his smile returned.
They will, in time.
He gestured towards the dais and an area beyond it, hidden behind more of the heavy black drapes.
Come, my throat is parched, and I need a drink. We'll talk.
Garrow nodded and carefully returned his sword to its sheath. As he turned away, he met the gaze of the dark-haired woman Cinderman had called Zaon.
You owe me a weapon, Phantom, she told him. You good for it?
We'll see, he replied. Above the endless clanking tread of the walking city, there came a sharp rapping on the metal hatch of the cabin. The assassin burst from the place where he had been crouched for the past few hours with such velocity that Halm almost drew his shimmer knife in shock. The killer had been so silent, so still, that Halm had begun to wonder if he had fallen into a slumber of some kind. Now he realized that the man had only been at rest, waiting for a target of opportunity. Inky black smoke gathered in the assassin's hand and began to take on a familiar shape. But Halm was quickly on his feet, stepping between the hatch and his twitching charge.
No, he said firmly. Put that away. This isn't the time. You don't tell me what to do, hissed the killer. I tell you.
Han let the exasperation show on his face.
My orders don't come from you, he hissed. They don't even come from him. So back off and let me do my job.
The assassin muttered something foul and venomous under his breath, slinking away to the open window. His scarred hand was empty again, and his fingers toyed with the growth of unkempt stubble on his chin. The scent of brimstone lingered in the air as Halm peered through a spy hole in the hatch, and then cracked it open to allow a wiry deckhand to slip inside. She had a picked slate in her hand.
"Got you something," she explained,
her accent thick with the heavy vowels that betrayed a tech-nomad upbringing.
"Did just like you asked."
When they had boarded the Walking City, Halm had paid this woman to slip a code spike into a port on the maintenance level of the Central Interlingua, the Walking City's core Vox Nexus, through which ran a steady stream of pirated data. The woman's employers, the mistresses of the city, were information brokers with great access to the decrepit digital networks in this part of the world. Halm could have paid them for the data he wanted, but that would have drawn too much attention. It was easier to steal it using a greedy cat's paw, like the deckhand.
"Give,"
demanded Halm, and he snatched the slate away. He leaned forward, allowing his right eye to open like a quartered fruit. Long ago, Halm had killed a Mechanicum adept for the optic implant, and added it to his own repertoire of tools. It extruded a fine mechadendrite that wormed across the surface of the slate and into a connector slot. Immediately, his forebrain was assailed by a storm of images and sounds, pieces of data captured in the net of scrap code that had been lurking inside the spike. The demi-intelligent software device had sifted the torrent of raw data passing through the Walking City's servers, much of it so grossly illegal that the mistresses would have been executed if they were known to possess it, and plucked out what Halm needed to complete his mission. He drifted into a mechanically induced fugue state, the data temporarily becoming his whole world. Much of it was useless, redundant, or vague, but the valuable gems among the silt shone through. The trawl of data slowly confirmed what he had suspected from the start. The woman called Keela, the target they had missed at the sanctuary, was on the Hesperides orbital plate. Snatches of Vox chatter, pieces of raw machine code, probability percentiles, all of it accreted into a solid, high-order chance that Keela was there. "Confidence is strong," Halm told himself. "This time we will have her." But there was something else that rose out of the stolen data. An outlier. For a moment, Halm thought some programming anomaly had crept into his feed, but as the information presented itself, he realized that it was what it appeared to be. Someone else was in the mix, following the same path, looking for the same thing. He found a partial picked capture from a monitor bird of a huge, muscular figure in robes, caught in the act of killing a man. Legionis Astartes. There was no doubt in Halm's mind. Bereft of armor and guns, it appeared, but still very much a grave danger. And the face. Halm knew that face. He had seen it before, back when he himself had worn a different aspect. The legionary had been clad in Stormshade war gear then, the decks of the starship Dagger Line reverberating beneath his boots as he strode past the alcove where Halm stood, not seeing him, not knowing what he really was. Halm got off the ship as soon as he could after that, learning that the legionary had another of his kind with him, a psyker whose gaze might pierce Halm's otherwise flawless disguise. He kept out of sight, with no other choice but to let things take their course. That he had escaped the confrontation out beyond Eris had been a miracle. But at least the legionary was alone this time. That shifted the odds against them from insurmountable to merely incredible.
"There's a problem," Halm began,
his voice sounding slow and drawn out to his own ears as he disengaged from the data mass and returned himself to a more human thought mode.
"There may be a..."
He halted as he became aware of what was going on around him. Being inside the information cluster caused Halm to lose focus on the real world. Time could pass, events could occur right in front of him, and he would remain only vaguely aware. Halm's face was wet. He reached up and wiped away hot specks of blood. In the middle of the cabin, a slagged thing that was some repugnant fusion of a melted metal stool and a burned human body lay on its side, emitting high-pitched squeals as it cooled in the breeze from the window. What was left of a face there sat locked in freakish horror. The assassin stood over his work, black smoke coiling back into his hand as a gun-shaped object deliquesced and vanished. Halm blew out a breath, secretly pleased that the killer had sated his needs, but also irritated at his lack of restraint.
You couldn't wait. Now I'll be forced to find a way to dispose of her that doesn't draw notice.
That's one of the things you're good at,
whispered the assassin.
What is the problem?
You have very poor impulse control.
The killer shook his head, gesturing at the data slate.
With that?
I believe we have the target's location, but there's an added complication. A space marine is also on site. He may be there to protect the target.
Oh.
The assassin leaned in towards the burned corpse until his face was almost touching the blackened bone of its skull.
I've killed that kind before.
He looked away, glaring at Halm with glittering eyes.
More than once.